You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
Welcome to the Radio Facts Radio Show podcast. My name is Kevin Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to another edition of the show. We have a very special guest this week who is the best-selling author of Black Pain, along with other books, Plentiful Harvest, Stay Strong, and The Personal Touch. She also is a mental health advocate who trained as a licensed clinical social worker. She speaks on the college circuit as well as various major corporations, and she owns the top black public relations agency in the country. Please welcome to the show Terry Williams to talk about mental health.
Advertise on the Radio Facts Radio Show and reach the decision makers in the industry. Contact staff at RadioFacts.com.
Did you get a chance to see that video? Have you heard about it?
I can't. I really have to be very, very careful about taking in stuff like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's really, really because you feel it.
Yes. And the thing is that so many people online are, you know, they're very upset about it because it is very graphic. But the first thing that I saw when I saw the video, of course, it is disturbing, is that the woman is obviously mentally ill. Mm-hmm. And the child in her arm is terrified. So she's experienced, but she doesn't look like she's shocked. So she's obviously experienced this before, it appears.
Mm-hmm.
And then the baby, of course, is so young, the baby doesn't know what's going on. People are really upset with the father because they thought that he should have intervened. And he did another video where he states that the reason why he didn't intervene was because he had called for help before. And he feared for his own personal safety, that if he had hit her or if he had gotten involved and she called the police on him, that he would have been the one arrested and they would have given the baby back to her. So he said he felt he had no choice but to film the video and put it online so that he could have proof. And he said they still tried to arrest him after that. So you have so many dynamics working in here when you talk about mental illness. You have, you know, the legal system, you know, and how it treats black men. You have a family that is obviously deeply in need of help. I mean, the way the place looks like it's not clean. And children's services are now involved. But I question, you know, had neighbors called or had somebody said something, or would child services have gotten involved? So what do you think of that video when you see it?
It just reminds me, you know, how much unbearable, unspeakable pain that people are in.
Mm-hmm.
And that mental illness is alive. And you never, I think a lot of times we don't think about identifying it as mental illness, but somebody who would do that, something like that, and who would even sit back and watch it, how could you?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But people are really, 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 really disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
And are not getting help, and they fall through the system. It's horrific.
And I was going to say, what do you think about the father's position? What I explained to you about him, you know, thinking that the only way he could help was to film it?
Well, I think that there was something else that he could have done.
Right.
He could have taken the children from her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but to watch that, it's frightening. It's really like sometimes a black man doesn't know how to be, how to act, because they get shot and killed in a heartbeat.
Right.
But how do you allow that kind of abuse to happen right in front of you? There's a stillness in him.
But you know, you know what, Terry, speaking from a black man's perspective, I will say this, that even though I understand what you're saying, whenever you're in a situation that involves the law, as a black man, you automatically know you're wrong, even when you're right.
That's true. Black man can't get a break.
No.
Ever.
So it's like in a situation where you may have reached out before and asked for help and they don't take you seriously. And you know that if, you know, if she calls the police on you, that, you know, as a black man, the chances are that you're going to get arrested or that you're going to be harassed.
That's right.
What other choice did he have? Now, I think he probably could have picked the baby up earlier. I don't think the baby was in any more danger after she pushed the baby across the floor. But I don't know what his relationship was with the other child, but the woman was obviously mentally ill.
And, no question.
And I think that, in essence, I think that all of them were screaming for help.
Yes, there's absolutely no question about that, Kevin. I heard this, all that's required for the triumph of evil, that good men remain silent and do nothing.
Right.
And it's a matter of, yeah, there could have been consequences for him if he had acted, but how do you have this steeliness in you that would keep you from doing something other than filming?
Well, I will also add this to it, Terry. I think just the filming itself is an added bonus to this, because how many times has this happened and it's not filmed?
That's very true.
How many times has this happened and the father's not present? You know, and it's a stepfather situation. Or the mother's boyfriend. We've heard those tragic stories.
Yes, we have.
So if nothing else, what we can glean from this is that mental illness certainly exists in the black community.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
And that's not something we like to talk about.
No, it's not, but it's everywhere we turn, and you don't ever know, which is why generally I think it's important to treat people, talk to people with care, because you don't know what's burning on the inside of that person, what experiences they have had that could trigger something in them, and you could be gone in 2 seconds.
At that moment. Now, you said in... You're sort of adamant about thinking that, I want you to let me know if what the percentage is, but you said that you think a majority of people have issues or they're carrying something that
yes,
other people...
There's,
go ahead.
Yeah, there's no question. We're born innocent creatures, and then life happens to us. Everything that we are comes from, we inherit from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we experience... we inherit from our parents. The good, the bad, the ugly, the wounds, the scars, they all get passed on from generation to generation. And the problem is when nobody names it, when nobody gets help, and that's why the cycle continues.
Why do you think that mental illness in the black community is ignored? And before you answer that question, let me take it to even another level. There was a study that said that young black men, I don't even know why they had to do a study. I mean, we knew this, that they suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder from just growing up.
Severe.
Yeah, just
severe.
Yeah, seeing so many traumatic events, hearing gunshots, seeing dead people.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally like being at war.
Yes, it is.
And
the numbers are, it's Chicago. There's a big article in Essence Magazine about just the PTSD in Chicago alone.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot function properly when you suffer from PTSD and not getting any help.
Right.
There was a situation in the city fairly recently where a little girl was shot in the leg. She must have been about 3-4 years old, something like that. But long story short, her mother was interviewed for Daily News the next day, and everything she described about her daughter was PTSD. She didn't have a name for it. She said she every time she hears a loud sound, she starts screaming and crying.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what PTSD, that little girl needs to be in a room with a therapist drawing pictures about what happened to her.
Right.
That's how you begin to deal with children and help them to, move through that process. Because the mother said every time she hears a loud voice, she starts screaming and crying.
Hmm. Now, as a black therapist, do you think that that black people are afraid of therapy or do ignore it? Or what do you think the situation is? Why don't we?
I think it's perceived as a sign of weakness,
mm-hmm.
that you have to be the strong one. And you don't go tell your problems to white people.
Yeah.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
What about black people? What about telling it to a black
people? Black people. Mm-hmm. No, okay. We don't do either one. But
unless it's grandma or auntie or who somebody in the family.
Mm-hmm. The thing is that we know that people are not well.
Right.
But we are afraid to speak it out loud. And so the patterns continue generation after generation after generation. I've talked to many people who will say that they knew that there was something wrong, but nobody would talk about it.
Right. Or do anything.
Nobody would talk about it or do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why I think that we really, really have to do a lot more. It's just why we should create forums for people to speak their truth. There's a couple of young men that we work with who are members of the Bloods, and that I just knew it was important to work with them and create experiences for them to get to see another side of life. And to also arrange, I have a friend, he's a white guy who's a doctor, and he specializes in PTSD. And I asked him if he would speak with them. So the three of us sat together. I'm thinking we'll be there maybe about an hour or two. We were there for like 3 to 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked and they cried and they talked and they cried about their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Every single thing goes back to that. You have a parent who's an alcoholic or a parent who beats you. You don't ever forget that.
Or that neglected them or that was abusive. You know, and we talked about this the other day. Me and you talked about this, that there are some situations where we think that we have to see a black therapist, but in actuality, a therapist who's outside the community might actually be better because that for different situations, because the familiarity is not there. You know, like you
That's
go
right.
in, yeah, you say, I don't have any money. And the therapist's like, I know what you mean. I ain't got no money either. You know, then you become friends instead of establishing a doctor-patient relationship. So, mm-hmm. What do you think runs rampant in the black community? What do you see more of when it comes to mental illness? What kinds of mental illness do you see the most of?
Advertise on the Radio Facts Radio Show and reach the decision makers in the industry. Contact staff at RadioFacts.com.
I one of the things that I think is something that's very, very prevalent is anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a lot of experiences of anxiety. And really and truly, PTSD is something that is affecting everybody, and no one is getting any help.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to some kids one day, and this young man, I forgot, they were like 10th or 11th grade or something like that, and I said something about something, and so we lash out at somebody else because we can't get to the person who really wounded us.
Mm-hmm.
And this young man gets up, I mean, very, you know, he got up to speak his piece. And he said that he had stabbed a young man 7 or 8 times. And then what he said after that was what shook me. He said, and he wasn't even the one I was mad at. So he knew that there was somebody who disturbed his body, his spirit, or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't get back at them. Somebody's going to pay for that. And that's what happens. So
several people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. You were not even the intended one. I just couldn't get to the intended one, so somebody's going to pay.
Why is it that we tend to not address the issues that, because I think ultimately that's what, I always say that's what addiction is, the birth of addiction, is that it's an unaddressed issue. Maybe from childhood, and you know, you may have, like, for example, been abused as a child, and you ate sugar, and it made you feel better. So then now that becomes your source, you know, as an adult. You know, we walk away from some situations, and I want to get your advice on this.
That's interesting.
What do you do when you're in a situation where somebody and makes you feel a certain way, and you don't like it? You know, where they humiliate you or say something to you, they do something to you. If you don't address it, aren't you opening up an opportunity for you to carry that with you for some time where it will affect you more than anybody else?
That's correct. It always happens that way. it's really, really important. There are a myriad of experiences that I've had that I felt like I couldn't, I would die if I didn't get it out of me.
Yeah.
You know, I would call my therapist, such and such happened, and I just need to speak about it. Mm-hmm. One thing is to get it out of me, mm-hmm. and secondly, to get some recommendations, talking it out about how to move past it.
Mm-hmm.
But to not give voice to it is like holding poison inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what so many of us don't do. We experience really, really horrific things,
mm-hmm.
and then we get up and go to work or school the next day like we didn't have that
mm-hmm.
experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one thing in our school system, you know, we see somebody shot and killed, stabbed to death right in front of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this is for adults and children. We get up and we go to work or school the next day like we didn't just see that.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it's not been talked about, nobody says, baby, how do you feel? Nobody with any sense. They don't do that. Stop crying, whatever it is.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
But do you think that it evolves from slavery, Terry? Because you know that I remember reading a lot about, you know, in the early part of the 1900s, where mm-hmm. black women were raped, repeatedly
right.
raped. Know that also happened in slavery. And mm-hmm. they never reported it. You know, they just went on about like as if nothing happened.
Right. But it destroys your spirit
mm-hmm.
in some way. It always does. It's we are not meant to have those kinds of horrific experiences and keep silent about it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's a learned behavior from us, you know, just not trying to rock the boat or cause any problems?
Very, very much so.
Okay.
Very much so.
Okay.
And that we go, and there's sometimes shame involved in whatever may have happened.
Right.
But I mean, I think about, and just, you know, thinking about people who, someone told me that their home was burglarized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's reason enough to go and talk. If you're not regularly seeing a therapist,
mm-hmm.
that's a reason to go to talk to someone. We're not meant to hold that stuff in. We're meant to express it and get feedback on it to make some kind of peace about the situation. But we don't. And in our classrooms, and people even in the work environment, you know, horrific things happen and you get up and go to school or work like you didn't just see that. But then you can't really function properly.
Mm-mm.
So that's when we start seeing kids acting out because they have no outlet for what they just saw. Somebody, a relative, killed, or a stranger killed right in front of you, and you're supposed to go in the classroom or the office and function properly?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when they start labeling our kids with ADD, ADHD, and that right there, or special ed, get assigned to special ed classes.
Right, right.
And that right there.
Setting us up for the prison pipeline.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Do they still have special ed classes?
You know, that's a very good question. I'm sure they have to have special ed classes.
Yeah.
But you don't hear about it as much.
No.
You need to ask someone.
I need to ask somebody that too, because I remember they definitely had it when we were kids. And,
uh-huh.
you know, it was, the irony of it was, is that, I forget the comedian who said he was put in that class, but the irony of it was is that there were times that those kids were actually more talented and smarter than the other kids. It was like they were actually
mm-hmm.
creative and they weren't able to
mm-hmm.
adapt to that environment. And they
mm-hmm.
put them in those classes to, you know, because they thought that there was something or they assumed.
Yes.
But I, you know, when I saw the video and then I think about the other, you know, situations that happen in our community. And I think about the types of therapy because that was my course of study. And I have to admit that I'm taking my time in deciding if I want to complete it because we talked about this as well. I think on the therapy side, there needs to be some work. I think that people should understand that if you're going to get therapy, make sure you know get diagnosed first and foremost, and then know what kind of therapy you need, because there are some therapists who will drag you out forever. And you won't.
You should have goals. Right. You should have goals.
And,
yeah.
And they should discuss that with the therapist when they go in, mm-hmm. and make Absolutely. Them accountable.
Absolutely. That's okay. a really, really good point that you have just raised.
And I never thought of what you just said. Yeah, that's a good point. It's like if you make them accountable, yeah, and you follow up.
Oh,
That's a very good point. So
when you walk in, it's like this is an issue that I'm having, and this is what my goal is to get to, why I keep doing X, Y, and Z, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So that there is, so that there is a goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I just quite frankly think that if one has the means. Seeing somebody twice a month or whatever it is it's a gift that you give yourself.
Right.
And, you know, too many of us don't feel the freedom to just say, oh, that they're going to their therapist. White folks will tell you they can't come to said staff meeting. Why? Because they're going to see their therapist. Meanwhile, I know a sister who tells when she has to go for therapy, she says that she's going to go for her allergy treatment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's like there's a shame involved and an embarrassment.
Exactly.
Because you're not perceived as strong, or people think that you're afraid that people will think that you're crazy. Let me ask you this. On average, and you may not be able to surmise this, but do a lot of Black people go to therapy, or is it that we don't?
I think more than we think are going, because it's simply that it's perceived for many as a weakness.
Okay.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, read this article some time ago. I'm not going to remember the details, and if you want it, I'll make sure to send it to you. But the fact that Yale University done studies on the number of Black men who are not living past 60 years of age,
mm-hmm.
because of the pressures of being a Black man in white America.
Mm-hmm.
And not going to get help, and they're dying.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's going to happen when we don't take care of our emotional health.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. I think the hardest job in America is to be a Black man.
Absolutely,
I really absolutely do. Especially if you're dark complexioned.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because you have no resources.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
Let's talk about various types of depression. I don't think a lot of people understand or know what the breakdown of that is, but talk about, for example, what is clinical depression?
Shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are things that you're not able to process, not wanting to get up and to do things, not expressing anger, hurts, disappointments, and fears that just overwhelm you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not asking people for what you need, and you're secretive about your feelings. And there are things you can't seem to concentrate on anything. Feeling worthless is another big issue. And not knowing that others are getting help.
Tell me about bipolar.
And then,
go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, well, it's going from one extreme to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Spending tons of money that you don't have. That's one of the signs. Acting as if you're literally two different people.
Mm-hmm.
There are severe mood swings and that have an impact because you spend all this money that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has that kind of an impact. And sometimes people just, when you look at somebody that they're spending crazy money or acting a certain kind of way, we should think first that something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you're right about that. Jennifer Lewis,
right.
The actress,
mm-hmm.
I think she talks a lot about, she's very, very open about, you know, her experience being bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helpful for us to share our stories with each other. That's the only way that we are going to begin to heal individually and collectively,
mm-hmm.
to talk about the issues.
You know, one of my closest friends has bipolar disorder, and it just popped up from, but it's like we didn't notice it many years ago, but it just kind of popped up from nowhere, and he has those severe mood swings. But the thing is that he has an amazing sense of humor. you know, so which makes me think that maybe some comedians might be affected by it. But he has a really good sense of humor.
Sure.
And he will do things like, you know, we were talking one day about how he had an episode where he was on the freeway and he saw this club that was doing, it was a sign there, a club that was doing karaoke. So he pulls over on the freeway and parks on the side of the road, walks up the ramp, and he goes in and gets in the contest, and he sings, and he actually wins the contest.
Are you serious?
I mean, we laughed so hard about it. He came back down, got in his car, and he kept going. But he has he's had a few nervous breakdowns along with it. And what is a nervous breakdown? I've heard that term so many times, but what exactly is that?
Just really unable to function, doing everything excessively.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to look for.
Advertise on the Radio Facts radio show and reach the decision makers in the industry. Contact staff at radiofacts.com.
Now, we talked about PTSD, but let's give some more definition of that, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the symptoms to look for. We know that that is very common with young men, black men in the black community. But give some symptoms of that and what people can look for.
Well, I mean, people who are oftentimes angry for what seems as if there is no reason, being touched in a certain way is something that could send somebody off. And there's a certain sense of paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
You are affected by every single thing that you see, you hear. I mean, sometimes there's, you know, you hear something that reminds you of a gun. You hear, you're sensitive to sounds and shotguns. You are sensitive to those things. You feel those things. And you really just have, you feel like there is no alternative. Like, this is my life as a black man.
So could that be the explanation as to why kids eventually end up in the streets? Because they think that this is just the way it is?
This is the way it is. Exactly.
Okay. So you think that an intervention when the kids are young could actually allow them to make better choices as they get older?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's really what it takes. Because, see, I think part of the issue is we have parents who are not very, very informed.
Mm-hmm.
But our kids pick up everything from us,
mm-hmm.
just everything. So they watch what we do and how we do it. And And the other thing is, as a parent, we could do more to help our young people understand how they're feeling, or that, okay, your friend was just shot and killed. Let's talk about this.
Right.
Tell me how you feel about this. Tell me how you feel about it. But mm-hmm. nobody does that.
No.
And kids are smart as a whip. They don't miss anything. So they see what their parents are doing, feeling, saying, and we're not paying attention to our kids. Everything that they learn, so much of what they learn is from what they see us do.
You know, that I want to ask you another question that relates to that. When a situation takes place where a boy doesn't have a father, he grows up, makes good money, but still refuses to be a father to his child, even though he knows how that feels. What is that really about? Is that about status quo, or is it about shame or fear?
I think part of it is status quo, mm-hmm. but I also think shame and fear play a very, very, very big part. Those are scars that have never been healed.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want to fail at something that...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Or sometimes it's a matter of just not wanting to go back to feel that emptiness.
So could that be a form of post-traumatic stress disorder?
Absolutely.
Not having a father present, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We are so, some of us are so very accustomed to not seeing a daddy, knowing a daddy, or how to be one,
mm-hmm.
that it impacts every single relationship that you have,
mm-hmm.
every single relationship that you have, we have to pay attention closely to, especially to those who are close to us. When you see drastic signs of behavior, or you see somebody on the street talking to him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are just things just to pay attention to. And I dare I say that it's people don't pay attention to other people. And I think I'm just one of those people that when I see somebody, especially if it's a brother.
Right, right.
I will, we're crossing one another, and I will smile and say hello.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they turn around to look to see who I'm smiling at,
mm-hmm.
because they have come to learn that they don't matter.
Right.
And so I think that there's a lot that one can do. If you see something, say something.
Mm-hmm.
A smile at someone, patting someone on the back. Are you okay?
You know, it's so funny you should bring that up. I was talking to Corey Coco brother, Ocondre, in my last podcast, and I was saying that one of the things that we do not do in the Black community that I am so adamant about is giving people credit. And you don't have to be phony about it. But if you see something you like on a Black person, or if you see something that they've done well, or, you know, and it doesn't have to be materialistic either. I think it should be more personal, because then that makes them feel like it's, you know, not something they did, but it's who they are. You know,
yes,
if somebody
right.
makes a great speech, if somebody, you know, whatever it is, it's like we do not give each other compliments. We will criticize each other in a split second. But the and that's what I was going to ask you too about the crabs in the barrel thing. It's like, is that a form of I guess the whole concept of us living in close quarters, like the projects we talked about earlier in the 60s and the crabs in the barrel syndrome, where is it, you know, you can't get out because I don't think I'm going to get out. So therefore, I'm going to make sure that I destroy your self-esteem before it has a chance to establish. But then we leave those environments, but then we take that with us.
Advertise on the Radio Facts radio show and reach the decision makers in the industry. Contact staff at radiofacts.com.
That's right. We do. There's so much that we have inherited that we have just not shaken. Time after time after time, horrific things happen. And we just, like I said, just get up and go to work or school the next day like we didn't just get raped.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
By your daddy.
Yeah, we definitely sweep a lot of things under the carpet. I was going to ask you, now you've worked with a lot of celebrities, and I wanted to commend you on your SWV segment on WeTV. In your experiences when you work with artists, and of course you don't have to be, I'm not going to ask you to be specific, but what kind of combination is it to have a record deal or to be a musician and to head for stardom and still have all this baggage?
All that baggage. It keeps we see people unravel all the time because they haven't addressed their issues.
Mm-hmm.
We get in our own way because these issues are unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get to where you really want to be unless you are addressing your issues.
And another thing that people don't realize, and I thought you were done, I'm sorry, but is that fame and money and success do not change your current situation. Whoever you are before you have it,
that's right.
It is quadrupled when you get it.
That's right. Wherever you go, there you are.
Exactly.
And just having all those things just
gives you more access.
It definitely gives you more access. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also that you are. People treat you differently.
Right.
So you have an unrealistic way of looking at the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything that happens to us as children without help, without guidance.
Without proper guidance and without proper help.
There you are, without proper guidance. You're absolutely right about that. There you go. Thank you for that.
So I want to hear about your book. Tell me about your book. I know it's been out for a while, but I mean, just so people can buy it or order it. Go ahead.
No, it's really just trying to explain in everyday language what happens, what our pain looks like, what it feels like, what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the thing. And for people to just know, I still get mail now from people who just say, just sharing your story changed my life.
And doesn't that mean the world to you? I mean,
oh,
because that's, those are the people you're trying to reach. It's like that, and that's what I was talking about, to responding to things that help you as Black people. We just don't do that.
No, you're absolutely right. And this is why I do a lot of these healing circles, for lack of a better word, around the country. Mm-hmm. I will begin by sharing my story. And invariably, mm-hmm. I ask people to come up and share, and they do. Mm-hmm. Because they know that they're not standing on the ledge by themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to begin to do, is to share our stories with one another so that people just really know they're not alone. I've done it in a number of corporate environments where you can be sitting next to somebody in the next office for years and not even know them.
No.
Because it's not really appropriate to just, you know, start talking about your problems. But, I mean, when I did with NBC, there were about 2,000, it was a major conference from NBC, about 2,000 employees, Black employees. And people got up and shared their vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what happens when you create a safe atmosphere. Somebody begins with a story, and then you don't even have enough time because you're looking at the mask.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And one thing I meant to mention to you, just that Prince George's County, Maryland,
mm-hmm.
one of the wealthiest Black communities in the country. They also have one of the highest rates of domestic violence in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Essence did a 6-page article on it, and it's what happens when we don't deal with our stuff.
Right. Well, we just talked about it earlier. It's like you can leave, but you take yourself with you. And your habits, and when you have the money, it only exacerbates whatever you had before. It doesn't change. It doesn't make it less. Usually makes it more.
Mm-hmm.
So
So there's all these women who have been set afire, killed, just pain,
mm-hmm.
unbearable, unspeakable pain that you've never addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody violated you, and you never got any help. No talk about it. And so you take that out on someone else.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you had an issue with depression. And I don't know if you can give me like a brief synopsis. I think, unfortunately, it doesn't go away. You always have to keep it, in check. Can you give us a brief story and let us know what happened with you?
I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know exactly what. I would wake up. Not wanting to wake up, I would wake up with crippling anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Never wanted to face the day,
mm-hmm.
because facing the day meant lying and pretending that I was fine when I was dying on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Just had a horrific time trying to get up. I didn't want to see when I would go to bed at night.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to see daylight come.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't suicidal, but I didn't want to see daylight because it meant pretending.
Mm-hmm.
When I was really, really sad, I didn't speak to my parents about it. There was some friends who got me to a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was the beginning of my healing. A friend of mine, she and I went to graduate school together, and she said to me when the Essence article came out, she said, I remember vividly coming to your room, my dorm room, and oftentimes I would be sleeping, the blinds were drawn, and sleeping in the middle of the day,
mm-hmm.
because I just had great difficulty functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And some friends got me to a psychiatrist.
Okay.
And that's really what began the healing. A colleague of mine who's now a preacher,
mm-hmm.
she shared her story about she's severe depression,
mm-hmm.
Was hospitalized a few times for it, but she got up there and she spoke her truth and that of so many others. And there was an all-male choir,
mm-hmm.
that day, and you could just see the tears in their eyes, just literally singing and crying.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I brought my mother and my aunt with me because I knew that they never really knew what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And so I felt very alone. Many times when I was on a plane, I was like, I would be really fine if the plane went down. I wasn't suicidal, but it was just too painful.
It was just okay. If it happened, it just happened. I understand.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I would be really okay with that because it hurt too much to be on the planet.
Right, right, right. You know, and I think I should also add that we don't want to be, like you mentioned earlier, you never know what people are going through. We don't want to be a burden to our friends. So we need to start believing in therapy and getting help because if you're depressed and you complain to your friends are going to avoid you, which is going to make you more depressed. So it's best to find a way to talk to someone who is not biased. You know, on top of the fact that if you talk to even when you talk to your friends, that they're going to agree with you, that then they may not say, well, did you think that maybe you could try something different? Or they're not going to give you the kind of advice that's going to make you work.
That's right.
Like somebody on the outside will.
You're absolutely right. And not skilled.
Yes.
You know, to be able to follow up something that you have said that means something, but they're not going to go there unless your therapist will probe. But yes, I mean, it's really not to use, I mean, it's great to have friends and to talk to them, but they're not skilled enough to help you be guided in the right direction and to begin the healing process.
Right, right. And then you don't want the friendship to be based on complaining because everybody, our community, has more than enough to complain about, which is probably why we don't talk about anything. Because we'll probably never stop talking.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But I hear more and more people saying, there's a preacher that I spoke to at a church recently, and he just speaks openly about seeing his therapist. And that's where we have to get to that point. And more churches, I have noticed, are using the skills of their parishioners who are mental health people, mental health activists, or not activists, but therapists.
Right.
And who are going to talk to someone. And that's a blessing to see because, you know, there's this rash of suicides of black preachers. Every time I turn around, there's something in jet about another preacher taking his life.
Right, right. Well, what about the one that confessed that he was having an affair and then he had like a heart attack and died on stage or something like in the pulpit?
Yes. I remember that.
So that was interesting. I have a joke about that, but I'm going to leave it alone. I was going to say, maybe he held that information too long. Maybe he waited too long to express that. But he got it out. He said what he had to say. You know, it was done.
You are funny.
But I was going to say, the other thing is that we, and I got this from, you know, whenever I do a podcast, I always get so much information from the guests. And I thank you so much for being on the show. When I was talking to Corey last week is that, you know, if you go to church and it doesn't work, don't stop going to church. You know, try a couple, at least give it four or five other churches, because you can go to a church and you will definitely, just by being around people who have experienced some of the same things you've experienced, you will definitely feel better. But if you go in there and you don't feel it, everybody's kind of looking at you through the top of their glasses, and the minister, you're not feeling any anointing coming from him, you know, or her, then it's like you definitely need to keep going instead of just giving up at that point, because that might be your last resort, if nothing else. So
you're absolutely right about that.
Right. Did you want to add anything? You have anything coming up you wanted to talk about?
Well, doing a domestic violence healing conference.
Okay.
October 3rd in New York, working with the Commissioner of Domestic Violence. And there's so many wounded and scarred individuals who, you know, are violent toward their mates.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really horrific situation. And it hits both ways. There are men who abuse mentally and physically women, and women who do the same thing to men.
Right. That's a shame thing, because men don't want to admit that. But I agree with you.
For sure not.
Right. Right. Now, so you being a therapist and working in this environment, and I think me and you both know this, but I don't think other people know this, that even therapists have to get therapy because of all this information you take in, correct?
I was just getting ready to say, yes, that's one reason, which is what impacts on preachers as well, because everybody is coming to them with their stuff.
Right.
There's but so much that you can take in, but you're absolutely right about that. You know, the therapist needs counseling, you know, themselves.
Right.
They are not perfect. They have a wonderful skill and can really help their patients, but they're like, you know, they're screwed up too.
Right.
There's not one of us, walking this planet who is not.
Right.
It was my pain and suffering that led to me, you know, speaking briefly about it, that then the Essence editor-in-chief heard me and asked me if I would share my story. It could have been career suicide. But what I knew was that I wasn't alone. And then Essence received over 10,000 letters from people saying, girl, you're walking down my street. Best friends didn't know, family members didn't know, but they told me.
You know, you brought up a very important point. I'm going to have to add this in, but you just brought up a very important point. I've just made a commitment to myself that I'm going to feel no fear. You know, there have been so many things that I have, opportunities I've had, things I could have done that I did not do because of fear. You mentioned just now, you know, it could have been career suicide. Do you realize that these are the things that make people stars? When you go out and you do something that other people don't do, that's what makes a star.
You're absolutely right, Kevin. You're absolutely right.
So if you're worried about it, you're probably on the right track.
You're right. There's zillions of people who are going through the exact same thing. It's an incredible thing to create the kind of space for people to be able to share their stories, and then you just say, I'm not the only one. I just really would love, it has nothing to do with the fact that I wrote it, but I just know that Black Pain, It Just Looks Like We're Not Hurting, continues to help people 5 years later, and I just feel like, what a blessing. Just what a blessing, you know? I love what you're saying about no fear.
Terry, I thank you so much for talking to me today, and I think they're going to get so much out of it. It's such a pleasure talking to you. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, it's really been my honor and my pleasure, and I'll just say this, that when you go through the fire and you come out on the other side, I think that's when you really find out what it is that you are called to do.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.